Welcome to the Bengals Wire Podcast. I'm your host, Cameron Zargar. Today we'll be talking about the 2018 NFL Combine, who stood out and who should move up Cincinnati's board, and who had a poor showing and might not be in consideration for the Bengals. Today I'm joined by John Sheeran, a writer for CincyJungle.com and an analyst on the Bengals' YouTube channel, DNH Sports. John, what's the latest with you in the combine and your experiences watching it?
It's been quite a long 4 days for me because I just try to watch as much as I can because a lot of times when you watch the combine, you're just kind of confirming what you're seeing on tape with like the athleticism drills and just the on-field drills as well. You can kind of gauge what a guy, normally does well and doesn't do well in those kind of drills. And it was, it's a big year for interior offensive linemen, big year for linebackers as well, and it happens to match up with the Bengals' needs. So really focused and keened in on those couple of positions.
Yeah, well, so we're going to talk about interior guys. We're going to talk about guys like linebackers and tight end, things that the Bengals might be looking at. But I want to start with the tackles. And perhaps one of the most interesting stories was Orlando Brown's showing at the Combine. And it's of particular interest to the Bengals because of his connection with Marvin Lewis, as his father's connection with Marvin Lewis, and then him having a connection with him as well. And the Bengals have shown interest in him, I believe. But he had a historically bad showing at the Combine. Do you have any theories? I mean, some people say maybe he's hiding an injury, or maybe it shows his lack of work ethic or something like that. Do you have any theories on his showing?
I'm not a big believer in like those conspiracy theories when it comes to just workout performances like this, because when you watch the tape on Orlando Brown, the overlying positives with him is just that he's a people mover, and because he's so massive, he's 6'8", 350 pounds, he just swallows up smaller edges. And that was the kind of stuff, the topical stuff that you saw on Twitter when people were watching this film. Oh, he just plows guys over. He's a road grader. He's a run blocker. But when you watch him pass protection, you see this guy is not an athlete, and he's not capable of mirroring, athletic edge rushers, not even in the Big 12, and also he won't be able to in the NFL. And you could definitely foretell this kind of, not of this extent, but you could foretell an underwhelming performance from Orlando Brown, the Combine. And this kind of thing, like people are talking about him falling to day two or maybe early day three. I don't think that I think it should be a legit conversation if he should be drafted at all, because there has never been not even a long-term starter in the past 20 years who performed this poorly at the combine. And a lot of people will gloss over, combine numbers for offensive linemen, but just like we talked with James last week, this kind of stuff matters in terms of projecting overall traits of what an offensive tackle can do. And he could get away with this kind of stuff in college because edge rushers in the Big 12 specifically, they aren't as refined as those you're going to see in the NFL. And he could just get away with his overwhelming size, but you definitely see the lack of explosion, the lack of relative speed, the lack of balance and ankle flexation that were shown from this combine performance. It's just, there are red flags that just cannot be ignored, and they have to be really, really monitored going into his pro day as well.
Yeah, so but you didn't buy into him being a top, or a mid-round, let's say mid-first-round pick before the combine, right? So you weren't buying the hype.
No, because like I said, the main things that people liked about him was that he was so powerful in the run game, where he just sealed guys out of the gaps all the time because of his size. But there wasn't really any nuance with this game. There wasn't really any technique. His hands were kind of all over the place. It was hard for him to gain leverage against guys just because of how tall he was. And he wasn't there yet as a tackle. And then when you bring these kinds of red flags in terms of athleticism, I mean, yeah, this really only confirms what some people saw on tape, and specifically for me, a guy who's just athletically not capable of playing at a high level or even as a backup level in the NFL.
Okay, well, the Bengals do need a tackle. That's almost for sure. I mean, Andre Smith's not the answer. Obwehi, even the Bengals have started to kind of show that they're not, that he's not developing the way they would have liked. Now, Mike McGlinchey, if I'm saying that name right, from Notre Dame, was another guy that you know, has the kind of upside that might interest the Bengals. What did you see from him?
Right, so he didn't do the 40 or didn't do any of the three-cone short shuttle, which are they're pretty important in terms of offensive tackles, but he did do the jumps, and he was okay in that. And those jump numbers, they also show up on film in terms of explosion, getting out of his stance. He has decent tape at Notre Dame, and I think he's one of the more he's one of the more ready tackles to come in and start for a team day one like the Bengals could need. But I think there are some minor athletic limitations that you're getting from McGlinchey that could, you know, affect his upside long term in terms of like reaching Pro Bowlers and whatnot. But I think he's a guy that has a good chance of making a long career in the NFL. And I think when he tests at his pro day with his 40 and his agility drills, you're going to see kind of average numbers, kind of like his jumps. But in the drills, he looked decent coming out of his stance. He looked good in just moving in general for a guy who's 6'8 and 310 pounds. He fits the picture of what you want to see. He's got that Joe Thomas type length or Joe Thomas type size, and also has longer arms than Joe Thomas. I'm not comparing him to Joe Thomas in any way, but I'm just saying he just fits the mold of what guys tend to look like. And you know, he moved pretty well. You know, he had a decent combine.
But your best prospect, I think, from the ones that at least we're discussing here, or the perhaps from the combine, was Connor Williams, right?
Oh, yeah. The thing with Williams is that he played in 2016 at about 290 pounds, and then he gained about 20 pounds coming into his junior year this year, and he was about at 310, 315, and he looked noticeably more sluggish and just not as athletic as he was the year before. And it really made people wonder, okay, maybe this guy is just not meant to play at that level. Maybe he's maxed out his frame at 290 pounds. And then he measured it in the combine with only about 33-inch arms, which is slightly below average, what the NFL typically likes to see in its tackles. And that 290 to 300 is probably where his frame is maxed out and where he can maximize his athleticism. And that's what we saw at the combine, with very good jumps, a very good 40, two very indicative metrics in terms of predicting success at the position. And I think he definitely solidified himself, to me at least, as a guy who you should definitely try out at tackle before you move him inside the guard. I know a lot of people think that his overall upside would be higher at guard, but I think he has the athleticism at that size to play at tackle. And not a lot of people want like their tackles to be under 300 pounds, but I think he has that, you know, that core strength, that lower body strength, and those and large hands, strong hands to last outside and maybe not have to move inside just yet.
And you think he's a realistic option at number 12?
I think he and McGlinchey are realistic options because McGlinchey can come in immediately, probably more than Williams, and produce at least a serviceable rookie season. I think Williams has the higher upside of the two of them, which is why Williams may have the edge at 12. But I do think that they're both, at this point, mid to late first-round prospects, and because of the need that the Bengals have at tackle, they're definitely legitimate options there.
All right, well, let's move on to guard. So we have Clint Bowling for now, you know, until I guess he, you know, some team like the Browns offers him more money. But for now, we have Clint Bowling. So we need one guard. We have a couple of guys who might have, you know, who showed some promise late in the season. And Redman, Westerman, would you say that they have some potential as starters, right?
Well, we needed to see more than just two games, specifically from Westerman. But I think Westerman showed that he still is the prospect that the Bengals thought he was. That kind of slipped to them in the fifth round. I didn't see enough of him to declare him the outright starter, and I definitely didn't see enough from Redman. But I do see enough where they can at least challenge a spot for this year.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, the Bengals have no problem with you know, drafting. Even when they have potential starters, they have no problem with, you know, adding players. We've seen that a lot. And like, you know, a tight end, for instance, they'll draft tight ends, even though they have a number of tight ends. So let's talk guards. I know you were really impressed with Notre Dame guard Quentin Nelson, right?
No, there's no one who wasn't impressed with him. And like he like if he was a tackle, if he had slightly longer arms, he'd be the number one overall prospect in this draft, just because that's literally how good he is. Like, I didn't actually know this about him until like a week ago, but apparently before he went to Notre Dame in college, he did a lot of like jiu-jitsu, or just like judo in terms of or just something along that nature, but it really refined his hand usage and it really refined his movement ability, just because, I mean, it takes a very nuanced kind of athlete to really perform that way. And I think at the time he was about 280 pounds. So that's where a lot of the technical aspects of his game kind of derive from, the way that he's able to sink his hips in terms of pass protection, and the way that he's able to drive guys out of the gaps in terms of run blocking. He's so technically refined. And the only questions I had about him was that, how is he going to test for being 325 pounds? You know, guards still have to be somewhat athletic, and he definitely tests better than what I thought he would in terms of flexibility. He didn't run the 40. I still kind of want to see that in his pro day. I want to see at least a decent 40, but he definitely checked off all the boxes for even as a guard to be a top five pick, which unfortunately for the Bengals, you know, they're not going to trade up for anybody in the top five unless, you know, he plays a premier position that, you know, the Bengals typically draft in the first round. But he definitely checked off all the boxes for me. Apparently him and McGlinchey are really like close at the hip, and they both interviewed really well. So I think Nelson had one of the best combines of any player to me.
Okay, well, but you know, like you said, he's probably not going to be available. A guy that should be available is UTEP guard Will Hernandez. You've told him that you think he's a traditional Bengals guard and he could fit their zone running scheme, right? What do you think about him as a potential? Do you think he's a first rounder? What do you think he might end up?
I think if Paul Alexander was still here, he'd be Quinn Nelson's like O-line one to me, but I think that if Paul Alexander was still here, he would be the guy that he would be banging on the table for, because he's just that traditional kind of Paul Alexander kind of offensive lineman. He had 37 reps on the bench press, which is a big number, and it's something that the Bengals like to focus on when drafting offensive linemen. He really plays with that kind of mean streak that Nelson does a lot. He didn't he's a little small. He's about 6'2", but he measured at 327 pounds, and at that size he ran a very good 40. And something I didn't expect, he ran really good in the short shuttle and the three cone, and that's really indicative of overall balance and flexibility, like we discussed with James last week. And I think that those kinds of numbers, they really, because the main question I had with Hernandez was that, is he going to be that athlete that can transcend both a power man and a zone running scheme? And I think that with these numbers, he shows the scheme versatility to fit kind of any offense, which really kind of ups his value into that first round projection. He was kind of an early second round guy coming in. I think he established himself as a late to mid first round kind of guy, and someone that can definitely help the Bengals at right guard or even center if they even ask him to snap. I mean, I would not be opposed of taking a guy like Hernandez who with that kind of power and that added athleticism at either of those spots.
All right, well, we're going to move on to a position that is, you know, very important for most Bengals fans, but we don't know how much the Bengals are looking to upgrade at center. Now, if the Bengals do draft a center, we're talking about, because, you know, they want to give Bodine a new contract, we're talking about a potential Montana, you know, Steve Young type scenario, right? Where you have this, the greatest of all time, but you still kind of get the young backup who's going to be ready to take over at some point in time. But realistically, I mean, if the Bengals do want to re-sign Bodine, that means, you know, they're not going to take a center in the first two rounds, right? You would agree with that, right?
If they re-sign Bodine, I don't think we're seeing a center until probably at earliest the fifth round, because they already have Johnson under contract as a backup. And if they re-sign Bodine, that's indicative of them potentially thinking that this center class isn't as good as maybe we think it is, which I would call bogus on that. But, you know, they're more than likely to just, you know, stick with what they know in Bodine, and I wouldn't accept that, but I could understand it because that's who they are.
Well, okay, is there any chance? Because I know the Bengals have a really tough time thinking outside the box. Actually, you know what? I'm going to take that back. In general, they have a tough time, you know, taking risks. But when it comes to playing people at different positions, They're actually pretty revolutionary. That never works out. Like, they tried Jeff Driskel at wide receiver. They were thinking about trying John Ross at corner, right? So they do some crazy things.
But both, I guess, got injured, but, you know, yeah, in the process.
Yeah, poor Driskel. Yeah, but I guess maybe they don't do it when it makes sense. Like, for instance, I mean, I'm not saying that Bodon would be better at guard, but maybe he could do less damage at guard because, you know, I feel like center is a pretty important. Like, I don't know. I feel like center might be a more important position. But at any rate, is there any chance that they move Bodon to guard?
I think there's always a chance when you're talking about the Bengals. It is something that I could definitely see happening because no one really expects it. Everyone expects that if they re-sign Bodine, he's the center for the future, and they could completely pull like a 180 on us and just move him to right guard. And if I remember correctly, he was listed at the combine, or he was listed at least in a lot of databases where, you know, people get information about the draft as a guard coming out of North Carolina. He played center for North Carolina, but some people did see him as a guard because, you know, he had no experience with snapping out of the shotgun. And if you remember correctly, like, there were reports in training camp and early in his career that he was having trouble snapping the ball to Andy Dalton in the shotgun. So I think that was kind of why you were hearing those kinds of reports, because he played in a limited offense in North Carolina. But it wouldn't surprise me to see him as a, you know, coming back as a guard and maybe getting a center because it's a good center class. But this is also a good guard class. So I don't know why you wouldn't address both those positions in this draft and just, you know, not bring back Bodine because he's bad. Because I think regardless of what position Bodine plays at center or right guard, you're still playing a very limited starter, and it doesn't give you as much freedom as a play caller because you're playing with a guy who can't make half the blocks that you want him to. So I don't think it really decreases his negative impact, if you will.
Well, let's not think like the Bengals for a second. Let's think we're looking to replace Bodine. What better person than Iowa center James Daniels, right?
There is no better. If Bodine's the yin, then Daniels is the yang, if you will, because he tested very well in terms of flexibility and balance, something that was a major concern with Bodine coming into the draft. Bodine ran a three-cone drill that was 1 second longer than Daniels, which is kind of astounding when you think about it. It showed up a lot on Daniels' film. He was able to get out in front of a lot of reach blocks on three techniques, which is a really hard block to ask from a center, specifically in an outside zone scheme. It's something that you see Travis Frederick for the Cowboys do a lot, and Daniels is doing that at 20 years old in the Big 10 conference, and that was really impressive on tape. I think he still struggles against power, but we're not really here to talk about film. We're here to talk about his workout, and his workout was outstanding. He did not run the 40, so we're gonna have to see what he does at his pro day, but he is the opposite player of Bodine in terms of athleticism. And just on athleticism alone, he's an upgrade over Bodine because of what he can give you as a blocker.
Yeah, but all that means, like you said, you know, we're not gonna draft him. So two guys that have a better chance of being drafted by the Bengals are Ohio State center Billy Price and Michigan State center Brian Allen. Price, you know, because of his injury, could be a value pick. The Bengals love that. Right. You know, right. That might have been a motivating factor behind drafting Obwehi. And, you know, we've seen it before. The Bengals taking guys with, whether it's injury issues or character issues, that they liked and they felt like they could get at a great value. You know, in defense of the Bengals, Carl Lawson was one of those guys. So mm-hmm. That was a great pick. But about Price, you know, you think he could probably end up as a third or, you know, mid-round pick. And because of that pectoral injury, you know, if he was in the NFL, we wouldn't think twice and say, oh, he'll be back for the next season. It wouldn't be a big deal. But drafting guys, it impacts their stock pretty significantly. So what do you think about the prospects of him ending up on the Bengals?
I remember last year when talking about who the Bengals should pick in the first round, the conversation was just about, let's just hope that he plays this year. It doesn't matter if he's good or if he's bad. Let's just hope he plays. And when John Ross came and they didn't play, and then that you know, it's like, oh, here we go again. It kind of feels that way with Billy Price because, like, I mean, I feel like we've all read the story before. You know, he tore his pectoral, but it's not a complete tear, which is much worse. It's like a several month recovery. A partial pectoral tear is, you know, it could range from weeks to months, but the prognosis is that he should be ready by training camp. And what we all know about Bengals players that should be ready by training camp means that they should be ready by December, because that's just the way it goes. So Price is a great prospect. I think he might be the cleanest center in this draft before the injury, but now with this injury, he's definitely an option at 46th overall, because he could have went in like the late first round without this injury. He might still go in the late first round because maybe a team just has that high of an eval on him. But I kind of really wanted to see how he tested, because I didn't think he looked that athletic on tape. And he does have only 32-inch arms, which is kind of a concern. But I wanted to see his athleticism, and I would definitely feel better about him if he didn't have some sort of injury history. And what we all know about the Bengals is, you know, whenever there's an injury that shouldn't take so long, it will take longer than it does. So I kind of want to stay away from Price, but he's definitely a guy that if the Bengals take in like the second or third round, the first thing they'll say is, oh, we had him like top 20 on our board, and this is a great value pick. So I can already foresee that kind of scenario happening.
Yeah, and then with Brian Allen, you know, he led all centers with 28 reps, which is still, I mean, it's good, but it's not Bodine good. I think Bodine had 42 reps. Is that right?
Bodine is the golden standard for a meaningless combine drill, for sure.
Right. So,
But J.J. Dielman last year, the center that drafted at Utah, but didn't actually make the roster, he led all centers at the combine with, I think, 27 reps. So it's definitely a thing that you need to watch for with the Bengals and centers, is that, you know, they like guys who can bench a lot, and he led everyone in bench. He was a guy that, his tape was pretty good at Michigan State. Then he went to the Shrine Game, which is the All-Star game before the Senior Bowl, and he was really good there, and people started to kind of figure out who he was. And he didn't test that great at the combine, but he tested well enough. You know, it's well enough is still better than Bodine's athleticism. And I think, but also he's 6'1", 300 pounds, which is definitely on the smaller side. So that itself is probably going to push him down to day three. But I think if Bodine's on the way out, and I had to guess what kind of player they would bring in to replace him, based off the history of the guys that they drafted the position, I don't know what Pollock's going to bring in terms of philosophy in that sense, but I think Allen would look like the favorite as far as what a new center moving on from Bodine would look like.
Yeah, well, let's move on to other positions. So the Bengals, they need a linebacker who can help them in coverage. You know, maybe one day we can stop a tight end. And one guy that Bengals could be interested in the first round is Georgia linebacker Roquan Smith. Now, he had a pretty solid, day, wouldn't you say, at the combine?
Oh, for sure. He only ran, he just ran the 40, and I think he injured his calf and didn't do the rest of the drills, but he said that he should be good to go by his pro day, so we'll get to see the rest of his athletic profile. But the main thing with him is that he played at Georgia under 230 pounds. I'm not sure where. He might have been closer to 220 than 230, but he came into the combine at 236 pounds, which for him is kind of, it's on the heavy side. It's kind of like that Connor Williams situation last year entering his junior year, but he still ran a 4.52. So I think his frame, it might be maxed out just around 235, 240. But in this day and age, you don't need middle linebackers to be 250 pounds. You don't need Ray Malugas anymore to man the middle of the field. You need guys who can go sideline to sideline and can cut and knife through gaps and whatnot. And that's exactly what Roquan Smith's game is. You know, he's a guy who plays with his hair on fire, and that his advanced instincts that you see a lot of Burfict in terms of reading plays, he has that in spades, but with greater overall athleticism than Burfict ever had. So I think that he's the guy that can impact that linebacking group the most of anyone in this class. And that's not really a hot take, because he's the number one linebacker on everyone's board, but definitely coming into the combine at 236 and still running a 4.52 is a win-win for Roquan Smith. And I'm sure you read this too. Paul Danner Jr. released an article talking about how, you know, he could be like too small for the Bengals' taste. And I don't know about you, but like, they drafted Nick Vigil, who was under 240. They drafted Jordan Evans last year, who was under 240 pounds, and they both played significant snaps last year. Do you, like, I'm starting to think that maybe that narrative about there having a size requirement for linebackers for the Bengals might be kind of fading a little bit. But I don't know what Terrell Austin's recommend or requirements are going to be for the size. So it's kind of up in there for me.
Yeah, I mean, the Bengals kind of went a different direction in general last year in the draft. You know, with John Ross, there's not a very Bengals pick. And with Lawson, who is not their traditional type of edge rusher. So, you know, I think they saw that they had kind of a stale roster and they wanted speed. Now, if they want to continue with that trend, then yeah, I think their traditional Bengal mold might continue to be broken. You know, you mentioned Evans. So do you think he has a future? Because we didn't get to see a lot of Evans. But what we saw in the preseason, he was phenomenal. You know, he looked great in the preseason. He didn't get a lot of time in the regular season. Do you think he has a chance to be a starter?
I think he does. I think his tape last year, when he did get to see the field kind of late in the year, it was very up and down. Specifically in coverage, he looked lost at times, to be honest with you, specifically in zone coverage. And that was something that I wanted to monitor going into this year. But towards the very end of the year, he started to play a little bit better. And I think and that's kind of what happens when you just let rookies make the mistakes that they need to make, and then you just keep them out there to just, you know, learn from those mistakes and just continue to get better. So Evans is a guy who I think they want as like the third linebacker, and just maybe a guy who plays nickel, maybe doesn't, but kind of like that strong side linebacker to maybe match up against tight ends. And I think he does have a chance to start, but I don't think he's the guy that you want to say, oh, we have Jordan Evans, we don't need another linebacker, you know?
Yeah, well, going back to Roquan Smith, one thing he has going for him is that he played at Georgia, and the Bengals are one of those teams that really places a lot of stock in where a guy went to school. You know, I mean, they have two of their best players right now are from Georgia, but in general, they've said this. You know, I think was it Tobin just a month or so ago? It was one of the guys in management who said, you know, that's how part of their evaluation is, you know, that's a big part of it. As guys that went to, you know, certain types of schools. And I'm not saying, I'm sure all teams take that into consideration. You can talk more about that. But I think they feel like they've had success drafting from specific teams. And that's probably a big factor. Wouldn't you say so?
I think the overall hit rate for drafting guys who not only played for good teams, but played against solid competition is definitely higher than trying to find guys like diamonds in the rough against, you know, like smaller schools and whatnot. So, you know, going SEC, Big Ten, ACC heavy is definitely the safe route, but you're not always going to get the best prospects by only drafting from those kinds of schools, because you just want to really find the guys who stand out from the rest of the team, regardless of the competition, regardless of the strength of your own team. But Roquan Smith kind of fits both characteristics. He played for the, you know, the number one team in the nation for most of the year, and he was also the best player on that stacked defense. So he really checks off both boxes for what we think is their prerequisites.
All right. And now the last prospect that I know you want to talk about is Mike Gesicki. I don't know if I'm saying it. Gesicki?
Gesicki.
I don't know how to say his last name.
Gesicki.
Gesicki. Okay. From Penn State, who's a tight end. And it's interesting you brought this up, because – you know, they've mentioned they want to bring back Tyler Eifert, and I don't know if that means they want to bring him back if he's super duper cheap or, you know, with tons of incentives in his deal. But they've also kind of, I think they're thinking about extending Tyler Croft. I remember I saw a rumor about that earlier. I don't know how much there is to that. At any rate, if they're going to extend Tyler Croft, they might look for the next kind of, you know, Tyler Eifert type person, someone who could be a star at tight end and have Croft be the complimentary player. It's possible they could get both on the field regularly. If they re-sign Eifert and Croft, because I think they're going to get Croft done, personally.
Mm, yeah.
I think that's just going to happen because his value isn't too high that, you know, it's a typical Bengals extension. I don't have a problem with it. Personally, I like Croft. I don't know. I don't have the kind of expectations for tight ends that some people do. I think that's I don't know, maybe I'm too much of a purist when it comes to football, but tight ends didn't play this role until, you know, like 10 years ago or something. They weren't right. always these star receivers. And I have no problem if they're just complimentary pieces in the offense.
Right. Kraft to me is like the Sean Williams of the offense. He's going to get that contract like 3 years after his 3 years after he was drafted. A guy didn't really start until like his third year. And he's just like an okay player. You know, he's not going to do anything that wows you, but he
was developing some chemistry with Dalton, and that's the key. So with Dalton, I hate to say this because I don't mean to be insulting, but he's not like an Aaron Rodgers or Brady where you just mix and match pieces around him and he just keeps going. So like that stability, the fact that Kraft has been healthy and they started developing chemistry, I think that's more important to me than bringing Eifert back. I don't know, because I feel like he's going to play at least 14 games every year. We'll see.
Right. But he's got the dependability that Eifert hasn't proven he can bring. So
yeah, and I'm saying because of Dalton's kind of, he's not as independent as a quarterback as some of those star quarterbacks. You know,
not at all.
Drew Brees types, Brady's, even the Philip Rivers. Like Philip Rivers, they have all these, revolving receivers sometimes, and he does, Peyton Manning. All the great ones, they just keep bringing in different receivers and tight ends, and they can keep going. But Dalton, it's like when you mix up his receivers, it takes him a couple of years to kind of catch up again. But at any rate, you think there's a chance that the Bengals could target this tight end, whose name I forgot how to pronounce.
Gesicki
in the first round. You think that could happen?
Yes, I think that he had the John Ross performance of 2018, as far as pass catchers at least. But yeah, everything that he did at the combine was extraordinary. He tested in the 90 plus percentile of like the 40 of the broad jump, vertical jump, three cone, short shuttle. Anything that he did tremendous in, and that is going to boost his stock tremendously. I think he was like just a day two prospect coming in, and I think he's going to get legitimate first round consideration from most of the NFL. And I only really consider him to be an option because they have a precedent of drafting tight ends. Jermaine Gresham and Tyler Eifert in the first round, and I think this kind of performance maybe really take them back in terms of consideration for Eifert, because they have a guy that's probably going to be available at 12th overall that can bring the athleticism that Eifert brings, and plays a position that they have a history of drafting in the first round. So and kind of like we didn't hear about Ross like as a possibility until well after his combine performance, and I don't think he was in the conversation at 9 until he ran that 4.22 40. So I think Gesicki's performance is going to give him that kind of hype elevation that Ross did to himself a year ago, and I think the Bengals are definitely going to take a lot of stock into it.
Well, that's a good point, because I was thinking the previous year the Bengals took Tyler Boyd. I know he didn't blow people away, but he was a second round pick, which means that means a lot to the Bengals. It means they've invested something in him, and he had like 600-700 yards, which isn't bad for a rookie. He seems kind of like a good complimentary piece for AJ Green. He's kind of like the over the middle, in between the numbers type guy. But they were like, this offense needs a jump start. And I think Lewis saw that. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like Lewis kind of threw his Hail Mary, maybe the rumors are kind of that he wasn't the one who wanted him, but
right,
it was a Hail Mary. I don't know who threw it, but it was kind of like a Hail Mary, like, this team was on the verge of winning a playoff game, which is such a big deal in this town. Was on the verge of winning a play. It was like on the verge of winning Super Bowl, and then we just kind of crashed. And so, let's kind of like see if we can get something out of this aging roster. And it's like, let's, add this dynamic in John Ross. So that kind of John Ross pick took us a little bit by surprise. I think this we could see something similar. But you agree that that would be if they don't bring Eifert back.
Yeah. Because I think you agree that bringing back Kraft is just like something that's going to happen regardless.
Classic.
Yeah. But if they bring back Eifert, they still have Uzoma behind him. They still have a Hewitt still on the books, and they drafted like a guy last year, Mason Schreck. Yeah. So the tight end room is pretty full at the moment, but it wouldn't, I guess, necessarily surprise me for them to draft a guy who won't see 100 snaps, or regardless if he's injured or not. So that could still be Gesicki.
What about Uzama? No, not much potential as a receiver, right?
Yeah, he's more of a vertical threat than Kroft is, but obviously Kroft showed something in practice to take over for Eifert as the number one, and he didn't really run away with it, but he did he did enough to solidify himself with the future with the team, and I don't think Uzoma has necessarily done that, but he's still a guy that, you know, is a solid like two or three, kind of like that inline kind of blocker tight end, so he still has value.
All right, well, that was pretty good. I learned a lot about the combine and guys the Bengals might be looking at. We're going to continue to talk the draft leading up to the draft and shortly after the draft on the Bengals Wire podcast. Make sure to check out our website at bengalswire.usatoday.com. Make sure to follow John on Twitter, one of the best follows if you're a Bengals fan. That's at John_Sheeran. You can follow me at Cameron Zargar, and you can follow Bengals Wire. That's all we have for this episode. We'll see you next time.